Welcome to the One Wyoming Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Thorburn. You can follow me on X at @by_RyanThorburn. Get all of my coverage of the Cowboys and Cowgirls at GoYO.com. We are in the plush studios here at War Memorial Stadium, but we are talking hoops today with a special guest, Ken Pomeroy from KenPom.com. Ken, welcome back to Laramie. You're going to go to the Boise State Wyoming basketball game tonight. What's it like being back in Laredice?
it's everything you would expect and more. It's great to come back. I think the last time I was here was 2021. So great to come back here and get an opportunity to go to a game tonight, you know, meet with the team. And I'm looking forward to it.
Of course, any listeners out there that love the minutiae of college basketball and stats and breaking down possession by possession basketball already know all about you, Ken, but let's get into your background for those who aren't familiar with you. I know you grew up in Virginia and you went to Virginia Tech for your undergrad and then atmospheric science graduate degree from Wyoming. How did you end up out here to do that?
Yeah, I when I was an undergrad at Virginia Tech, I kind of always had an interest in weather. And growing up, I was never really sure what I wanted to do. And I didn't know you could get a job in weather, which sounds kind of silly, but I always knew I wanted to be get involved in weather somehow, not on the air, but, you know, as a scientist. And, eventually started looking around at grad programs and, had this, me and my friends, I remember in undergrad had this kind of odd fascination with the state of Wyoming. Like it was just like a foreign country to us. You know, none of us have ever been there, but they had a decent football team and we were just kind of curious about them. And, you know, one thing led to another and I was like, maybe I should look into like applying to the University of Wyoming. That would be a fun place to like go study weather for a couple of years. And it kind of broadened my horizons. And so that's kind of how it all got started. And one thing led to another and the program for some reason, accepted me and that started my path to come out here.
Well, weather is certainly something that Wyoming fans have to deal with a lot. It's been a very strange, mild winter as far as snow accumulation in Laramie, still getting a little bit of wind here and there. So your drive here was probably just fine. But what was it about living in Laramie and being a part of this culture that, you know, what was that like for you coming from the East Coast?
Yeah, it was totally different. I mean, people will say like culture shock. And I don't know if it didn't take a lot of adjusting. You know, people are obviously really friendly out here and there's a greater, I think, sense of community. So that's not hard to adjust to, but more of the idea of maybe like for me growing up, in suburban Washington, D.C. to come here, it's like kind of small town living and doing a lot more stuff outdoors than I was used to. Those were the things. And obviously the weather was a challenge as well, but being someone who was majoring in atmospheric science, that was actually kind of a perk. Like, coming back here now and dealing with the wind, it's like, oh, this is kind of annoying. But back then it was like, oh, this is pretty wild. Like no place in the country has weather like this. And so it's a kind of an ideal place to study it.
You mentioned Wyoming had a good football program at the time. Who was the coach and were you into the hoops team as well?
Yeah. I mean, I was more into the hoops team for sure. I think, coaching wise, we had Dana Dimmel. Those were the Dana Dimmel years and pretty decent teams. Those kind of, succeeded the Joe Taylor years, which is really what got the program on the map and like got the attention to, you know, ignorant, college kids back in Virginia, which is, what my initial exposure was, but yeah, those are certainly some good times going to football games. And then, like, you know, I was definitely more into hoops. I've always been more into hoops than football. So I might have gone to every basketball home game, in those 2 years. You know, I didn't go back, didn't leave campus for the holidays. So I was here for like holiday break. So I went to just about every basketball home game. So it was, a lot of fun.
So if memory serves that era, I think Larry Shiat did his 1 year stint before he went to Clemson, and then you had Steve McClain for a number of years. What are your memories of the AA when it was rocking back in those days?
It certainly was. Yeah. You know, the first year I was here was Larry Shiat's first stint that 1 year. And I, you know, didn't, I had zero expectations for the basketball program. I actually, you know, thought they wouldn't be very good. And I, actually, those were the expectations, I think, around then the WAC. But certainly, you know, there weren't high expectations for the program, but ended up having a pretty good year. And went to the NIT, I believe, that year. The big memory was that they beat Utah in Laramie. Utah was number four at the time, I'm pretty sure. Utah would go on to the national title game, actually lead Kentucky at the half in the national title game. I mean, came very close to winning a national title that year. And Wyoming beat them at home. I think, you know, overcame like a 10-point deficit or something. That was really one of the best, most exciting games I've been to, just in terms of, like, you could tell, like, the crowd was not entirely sold at the beginning of that game that they can compete with Utah's Andre Miller team with Utah. But ultimately, was able to pull out that win, and it was just, it was incredibly exciting.
Yeah, those were fun days. I graduated from Wyoming, and my first stint in journalism was, you know, at the Casper Star Tribune during that era. And I just remember some of those wins. Obviously, McLean, when he won the Mountain West, they beat Utah here.
And right. Yep.
In a 16,000
that was
capacity situation. I remember that game quite well. Obviously, Marcus Bailey and Josh Davis and all those guys. It was a lot of fun. So I went into journalism and went into newspapers. You actually did get into being a meteorologist for the government. What was that like?
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I mean, to me, my passion is really in making predictions. So, you know, when people try to say, you know, how did you get into basketball from meteorology? You know, those things don't seem related, but really the thing that ties them together is making predictions, right? And so there's a lot of predictions on my website, but the ultimate predictions are of the weather, I feel like, especially in this part of the country. But certainly, you know, the weather affects everyone. And so to me, that was the excitement. You know, I worked in some small towns. I worked in Great Falls, Montana. I worked in Cheyenne as a forecaster for the National Weather Service. And so, you know, those aren't big markets. Those are places they don't have really like on air, like expertise on TV stations. And so they're really relying on you for the expertise to make the forecast and explain what's coming. So that was just incredibly rewarding. The hours were insane. Like you know, the weather service is open 24/7, right? Like they're the ones that issue like tornado warnings and things like that. So somebody has to staff them all the time. And so the hours were the thing that really did me in, but the work itself was tremendous. And, you know, there's a part of me that still, you know, misses just working on a forecast and kind of alerting people to what's going to happen.
Like most, journalism students, I was, you know, the old joke, I was told there would be no math, but I am proud to say I did pass my stat class here at Wyoming. Were you into math? What's the origin story of, you know, all of your KenPom data and calculations and formulas and all that stuff?
Yes. So I wasn't into math. You know, I think there's like, at least when I took the SATs, you know, there were two sections where I was like math and English or something like that, or verbal, I guess. And yeah, I did really well on the math portion, and like it was pretty mediocre on the verbal portion. And whenever, you know, I had like English classes or whatever and they'd assign reading, like it was just a chore to like get through reading a Shakespeare play or a book or something. I was just never committed to that. But numbers were super fascinating to me, and that stuff just kind of came naturally to me, and I was really interested in it. And so, like I've always had an interest in that, which obviously, you know, you need to have to do what I'm doing, because if you're not interested in it, it's just going to seem like work.
So did you start, you know, tracking basketball from that point of view as a hobby, or how did all these equations come about, and how did you decide, I'm going to try to do something in this for a living?
Yeah. So the first thing is I didn't think about doing it for a living. Like that was, you know, I enjoyed the weather stuff so much that it was just a hobby, and it was like a fun hobby to have on the side. So, you know, this really started, I mean, I think things got going early 2000s. The book Moneyball had came out 2002, 2003, maybe somewhere in there. And there were some other, the internet was sort of coming of age and becoming useful. And there were some really good people writing about baseball analytics online. Not that many people writing about basketball analytics, which is ultimately why I got into it. Because I probably spent, you know, a year or two like looking for the thought leaders in this space. And there was like nobody writing about basketball. So I was like, you know, maybe I'll just do it. You know, I'm sure people will be interested, because people are interested in baseball. And so that's kind of what got me started, you know, really 2002, 2003, 2004, those years I was working as a meteorologist in Montana and had some time on my hands and just kind of learned how to code and manipulate data and kind of thought about, you know, what formulas would be useful. There's a book by a gentleman by the name of Dean Oliver called Basketball on Paper that came out around 2003, 2004. Which was really influential in my thinking. And so so all that stuff just kind of came together and allowed this to take off.
So how did you get connected with the Houston Rockets?
Well, basically I was like the first guy to do college, you know, basketball analytics. And so Daryl Morey, famously the general manager, would become the general manager of the Rockets. I think when I initially met with him, he was like the general manager in waiting or something like that. But him and Sam Hinkie, who's a name that might ring a bell with people. It's like an assistant GM there. They got in touch with me and basically said, you know, hey, we're interested in your data. This is very interesting stuff. You know, we're trying to build a more objective approach to drafting players out of college. And let's, you know, have a conversation about this. So that's really kind of how that relationship got started.
So what did KenPom.com already exist at that point?
It did. Yeah. I think KenPom.com in its modern form existed and it probably began in 2004 or so, maybe like as an actual website, you know, you go back to 2002 and really like the initial ideas of it, you know, started in Laramie, like, you know, as a student, you know, they gave us like a free web space. And so I just kind of tinkered around with that. It wasn't KenPom.com. It was, you know, uio.edu/KenPom or something like that. But that's really like the very, very, very first incarnation of the website started here. And man, it's you cannot find it online. I wish you could, because it'd be a great demonstration of how far you can take things from a very, very rough start. But yeah, the initial ideas were, you wouldn't believe how kind of rudimentary they were.
So after working with the Rockets on analytics, is that when you've decided this is more than a niche? I can carve out, you know, a space for this where I'm, you know, an authority on analytics and basketball and why college basketball specifically?
Yeah, I mean, it even still took some time after that. You know, I remember like working with Houston and I was like, I kind of actually was like, I actually don't have enough time to do this. You know, I obviously had the full-time weather job and I, like I said, I still like that. So it was like, I kind of wanted to keep this a hobby and keep as few commitments to other people as possible. So that is, maybe took a few years after that. And, but just, you know, kind of kept at it as a hobby. Didn't think of myself as an authority necessarily, but like over time, obviously I got more and more, mentions in the media. Like that was really the key, was you'd have a coach, you know, bring my name up in a press conference. Like I remember Sean Miller when he was at Arizona, brought my name up in a press conference, and that kind of instantly, you know, gave me credibility. There's been, you know, other coaches along the way that have done that, but that's really where I think things started to change, maybe 2009, 2010, you know, just getting more of those like mentions in newspapers and online and from coaches. And at that point it's like, yeah, actually people are kind of like looking to my website as kind of the standard. And so, maybe I should think about, you know, I actually have to start thinking about, this is turning into like a full-time job. I have to think about which job I'm going to pick here going forward.
Right. Was there a point in time, that balance, where you're like, okay, this needs to be a subscription at this point because people want this information?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think 2010, right? Butler made the championship game. So Brad Stevens, the head coach, he was a big user of my work. And he mentioned in a press conference, like the first thing I'm going to do, he was like after the Sweet 16 or something, he's like, the first thing I'm going to do tonight is like go home and log into KenPom and figure out, you know, what my next opponent does well or doesn't do well. And this is like before all the crazy like modern tools we have now that have kind of superseded my work for a lot of coaches. But back then, like that was the only game in town. And so, you know, when Brad Stevens, who was kind of already thought of as this, you know, wonder kid coach, mentioned my name, you know, that's when, certainly one example of where things had changed. And so, yeah, that at that point, it's like, I think I also had like comments out there on the social media. It was just kind of starting then. And people are just like, you know, Ken Pom should get paid for his work here. Like, what's going on? At that point, I really did kind of think seriously about, okay, how would I start to, you know, charge a subscription for this, and what am I charging for, and how much am I charging? And eventually worked through that process. And obviously that led to me ultimately having to make that difficult choice to give up meteorology and go full time into basketball.
So I imagine the 365 teams all have a subscription. A lot of media, you just look at the Mountain West coverage, it's a lot of Ken Pom talk on X. What about fans? When did they buy into wanting to know things like this?
Yeah, to some extent, like the fans bought in first. Because you know, back in the old days, you know, pre-social media, this information was spread by word of mouth, like by message boards and things like that. And so to that extent, that's how like fans became aware of it. And the stray media mention would kind of drive more of that. Like, you know, I remember like Grant Wall at Sports Illustrated would mention my work, and, you know, that would kind of drive another surge of traffic, and that would just spread, you know, things more by word of mouth. And so, so that's kind of how it worked. Like, I really feel like, you know, people talk about, you know, of course, like coaches have a lot of subscriptions, media have subscriptions, but when you think about it, at the rate I'm charging, you know, 20, 25 bucks a year, like that wouldn't allow me to work on my own. Right. Like the vast majority of these subscriptions are from fans, and ultimately people who want to know more about their team or other teams, or just have like a handy reference for schedules and things like that. Like that's what ultimately drives, has allowed me to do this full time.
What's your favorite metric for college basketball?
I don't know that I have one, but I like to focus on, you know, obviously we have the 3-point shot, and that's become a bigger thing over the years. So I like 2-point percentage as a metric, in that it is underutilized, I think, by a lot of people, and it's fairly, like, it's easy to understand, but also kind of easy to calculate. It's unfortunately still not directly in a box score, although it's in the box scores on my site, but the official box score just has overall field goals and 3-point field goals. But the 2-point field goal percentage can be pretty illuminating sometimes. You know, if a team's really a good shooting team or very good at 2-point defense, 3-point defense is influenced by luck or randomness a lot of times, you know, from game to game, but 2-point defense really isn't. And 2-point offense for that matter either. And so I always encourage like coaches and people just getting into the game, and I kind of steer them towards that stat, because it is a lot more telling than you might think.
I think one cool thing for Wyoming, and, you know, obviously you being an alum, is your ex, the photo on the banner is of a graphic during a Wyoming game, and Jeff Linder's in the photo coaching, but it's like UW famous alumni and you're on the right list. That's gotta be pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a gag. I always tell people, I'm like, yeah, I'm like in the top four in terms of, you know, famous Wyoming alums. I'm right there with Josh Allen. But yeah, that was, I think, a basketball game on the deceased now Pac-12 network. But yeah, they included me in a famous alum. So I had to screenshot that and stick it on my social media banner, because, you know, how often are you going to, in any club, be considered, you know, one of the four greats, which, again, totally tongue in cheek. There's obviously people that have done more for society that have gone through the University of Wyoming than I have, but it's kind of neat to be mentioned with those other people.
Obviously, Jeff Linder is a very bright coach, and, you know, Wyoming's last NCAA tournament appearance, he did wonderful things here 4 years ago. He goes on to Texas Tech, but Sundance Wicks was with Linder, comes in, and, you know, one of the first things he said at his introductory press conference was, "We have to play Moneyball," referencing obviously the famous book and movie that you mentioned. You got to love that the Wyoming's coach is really into analytics and has, you know, put together a staff that uses it quite a bit. What do you think of Sundance Wicks and you know, what he can do at a program of this level?
Yeah, I'm excited. I was really excited when he got named the head coach. I mean, just the perfect fit, obviously, being, you know, the long history in the state. I always say nobody, I always tell people this, and maybe it means more to me than other people, because people's eyes glaze over sometimes when I mention it. But when I first started doing ratings, you know, obviously it was here, 97, 98, 99. The first thing I rated was Wyoming high school football, because it was like a sport that like nobody was rating. So I just wanted to like kind of test out my rating system and on something that nobody had ever rated, that I didn't really know anything about. And so I learned a little bit about who the best players were like that season, 97, 98. And Sundance Wicks was, you know, obviously the player of the year in the state that season. And so for it to come full circle where he's now coaching, you know, the University of Wyoming where I was doing that work was to me, it's pretty fascinating. But yeah, great that he got the job. He obviously seems to know what he's doing. And one thing I did in the offseason, you know, I had these preseason ratings, and one factor I added this year was a coaching factor. So it basically just takes like, hey, all the inputs that already go into the preseason ratings, what are the things that once we know like how good a team is based on that, what are the things that a coach adds to it? And Sundance Wicks, you know, after two seasons was the highest rated, basically the highest rated coach, second season head coach. So the system's, you know, a little conservative on rating those head coaches. There's not a lot of information on them, but through two seasons, you know, he'd really overachieved tremendously in his first season at Green Bay, and then came here and had was successful. And then this year he's overachieved as well based on the preseason rating. So I'm curious to see next year if he tops the list of what would be third year going on fourth year head coaches. But, The track record, even analytically, is very good. Obviously, Sundance, you know, great representative for the university. And yeah, just looking forward to seeing what he can do with this program going forward.
Yeah, obviously, last year he had to put together a team really, really late in the cycle.
Right.
And they were all good guys. It just didn't quite mesh together. Obviously, this team, a whole new team again, basically. And, you know, speaking of analytics, he said, you know, during non-conference, we were able to game the net a little bit. But it wasn't the most challenging schedule, and now they're in this Mountain West race, the last year of this rugged, rugged Mountain West, and they're struggling a little bit. But overall, you've said they've overachieved. What do you think of this collection of talent he's put together from a numbers standpoint?
I mean, from a numbers standpoint, you know, when you look at their profile, it's you know. So I always tell people, like, nobody's going to be no team. Even the great teams are not good at everything. They're going to be great at a few things, they're going to be good at some things, and they're probably going to be below average at a few things. This addition of the Wyoming team is really, they're not necessarily great at anything, but they're kind of average to good at almost everything. There's only one thing they're not good at, and that's fouling. They commit a lot of fouls.
They do.
Yeah.
Most in the country at one point last week, I believe.
Yeah, right. So that's the issue. But like I said, you know, you can look at the great teams and you can pick apart things that they don't do well. So honestly, the fact that they're like pretty solid in just about every category is probably the most impressive thing. It's not necessarily sexy or anything. There's nothing you can look at and be like, hey, they're number one in this. No, they're not number one in anything, but you know, they're above average in just about everything. And so that bodes well. To not have an obvious, you know, set of weaknesses, I think is a fairly good thing to have.
So most of you are listening to this, and the Wyoming-Boise State game has already taken place. But Ken, you're going to the game. You're going to meet with Sundance here this afternoon. I'm just curious. Obviously, you know everything about Wyoming numerically and all that stuff. But when you watch a game in person, do you watch it like a normal fan, or are you thinking analytically about it?
A little bit of both. I mean, I think, yeah, people would be surprised. For the most part, I do watch things like a fan, like especially, you know, I mean, I'm obviously a fan of UW, so I'm going to, you know, watch that game like as a fan. If I'm watching a game between two teams I don't have a particular interest in, then it's maybe a little bit more of an analytic approach, like understanding what to look for or interesting things that might happen in the game. You know, in some sense, I do watch a game looking more at like process as opposed to outcome. You know, did this play generate a good shot? You know, if somebody gets a wide open three and it doesn't go in, I'm not necessarily lamenting the fact it didn't go in. It's more like, hey, that was a good shot. You know, if you just have a game filled with those shots, like, you're going to be successful. So I do think about it maybe a little bit more in that sense, but certainly when it comes down to the last minute or two and it's a close game, and there's a last second shot or something, and there's crucial plays, like, yeah, I'm just as emotional as anybody else about it.
Well, let's hope Sundance got a lot of paint touch threes against Boise State. And yeah. Ken, thanks so much for hopping on the One Wyoming podcast. Great to have you back in town.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Appreciate it.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Make sure you subscribe at Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.